Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. The journey of a founder is unlike any other. The chips are seemingly stacked against you as an entrepreneur, but the burning desire to revolutionize the world and leave a lasting impact is stronger now than ever with many founders. Our podcast looks to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to pursue their next great idea, educate them on how to make this impossibility a reality, and create a supportive group of entrepreneurs who are there for their fellow founders. Our podcast features only the highest performing entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped, raised funds, built companies, sold companies, and have experienced life-altering challenges and some significant triumphs. Join us on this journey with the Founders Odyssey podcast and listen in on this upcoming episode. Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. We're excited to have you guys today. The Founders Odyssey podcast, what we're doing here is we're creating an environment to educate, inspire, and support you as a fellow founder. Today, I'm joined by Hunter Alamand, and Mr. Alamand is the creative lead with extensive experience in multiple oil and gas industry disciplines from materials to upstream production. Mr. Alamand has also experienced running successful startups, is the co-founder of Mariah Consulting, multiple experience in equity valuations and process engineering. Hunter is a self-driven executive with additional C-suite level knowledge being drawn from the professional network that he has built throughout his entire career. So once again, we welcome Hunter. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nathan. I'm really excited to be on the show. I think this is going to be great for new founders, you know, to continue to educate them, not only from the beginning, but towards the end of their, you know, startup plan. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. You know, there's so many questions I have here, and a lot of founders out there are also going to have those questions. So let's dive into why you do what you do first, because I think that is the propelling factor. And let's dive into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I tell the story pretty casually, and it just kind of fell in our lap as a blessing how we started in MMA. Me and some friends in Midland, one night we were at a hotel and we were having some beers and we were like, man, we need to get out of the rat wheel. And, you know, we were like, let's start a business. And we kind of kicked around our options, right? I mean, everybody has, you know, different passions. And I think for us, we're like, we could be really good consultants. We all have, you know, pretty differing experiences, you know, mine in materials and project management. My other partner, Seth, was an engineer. And then our other partner, Jose, he was a banker. So we had like this trifecta, you know, that can start a really good oil and gas consulting firm. And off we went, right? And, you know, we started picking up clients through our friends and family, you know, and sure enough, COVID came around about 3 months after we started the business and really changed everything. I got laid off and it allowed me to hyper-focus on Mariah. And so we started really engaging with clients, mostly on like the process and strategy creation, you know, type of services. And, you know, months go by, we're rocking and rolling in our little niche that we have, you know, just with our personal connections. And then Seth gets laid off. And so then it's like he's going around and saying goodbye to all of his vendors and relationships. And they're like, hey, do you think you can help us sell this business? And we kind of like sat there together and we realized, hey, you know what? We could do this. Like, I understand like the concept of M&A, you know, how we can put together, you know, discounted cash flow analysis and really take a look at this business and understand what we can get for it. So, you know, that first model, we spent probably 180, 200 hours in it. Like, you know, really just taking our time. And yeah, it just started this great thing. Just dove right in, ordered textbooks from Wharton and Harvard, and we started to get really deep into M&A. It took a couple of months with that client. They were really patient. They were getting ready to retire. Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for us was always being open-minded, right? We were always open to offering more services and learning more to help our clients out. So it kind of seemed like the natural path. And then when we got this deal, it was a no-brainer for us. You know, we started looking at the industry and the compensation is awesome, right? And they're like, well, you can make a lot of money here. And you're learning about businesses from like such an intimate place, you know, the financials, the operating procedures, you know, everything about their employees. It is really interesting. And it still is to me, like, you know, every day I wake up super excited because, yeah, it's a different journey with every business and every founding team. So that's kind of how we got
constantly working, you know, constantly working with different personalities and individuals from different businesses. I mean, that is one of the most exciting things I know for the podcast here. We're always interviewing different people. We're seeing a lot of different walks of life. So I can agree with you on what that feels like. So let's discuss a little bit about your company, the formation, and how you guys have structured that. And then let's talk a little bit about how founders need to have their ducks, quote unquote, in a row in order for them to be able to sell their business. And also not just selling, but creating the company to be acquired from the very beginning of the creation. So let's go through that.
Yeah. So I think the most important thing here is like the technical side. It's very process driven. So when you're from a buyer's perspective, you know, you're taking a very serious investment, oftentimes in the millions of dollars. So, you know, there has to be some methodology to ensure that you're making a wise investment. And so from a founder's perspective, think about, you know, if somebody's going to look at your business, do they want to see it in disarray, poorly managed? You know, if you're stretched so thin, you're obviously not like doing it right. And there's a way to help that. I firmly believe that it's mostly through process, you know, automation and, you know, just understanding what steps are required and sticking to those steps. Sometimes we all like to deviate away from, you know, having a rigid structure. You know, we got in business for ourselves to get away from the structure and to have a bit more freedom. But oftentimes I think people start to find out that running your business isn't just as simple as walking away from the cubicle and doing your own thing. So, yeah, it's very important that you understand that that's the perspective always like, through the business journey is that there are going to be other people involved and they won't get involved if it's really hard to understand, hard to operate and work with you. And it's just a cluttered mess. I like to use the term dumpster fire with my clients. You know, occasionally we come across those and it's okay. Obviously, you know, the kids, school, whatever they're doing in their life, you know, it creates some disorder in their business. But we always have to hone it in. It's way easier to do it from the start. If you would have started, you know, with a regimented process and really been focused on keeping your business in order and structured, it'd been a lot simpler to move to the next phase, either raising capital or selling your business to a larger acquirer. So, you know, I think especially for your audience, you know, looking at their business, especially in the early stages, that there's time to get this in order and really understand what you want to do with the business, you know. Making money and having a side hustle is very, very much different than being a business operator and running a business. So I think once you just define kind of the goals, then you can kind of start to think about, well, am I going to raise capital eventually to scale? Or do I think I have a good enough business model where I can eventually sell this to somebody else and sit my ties somewhere?
You were talking about a dumpster file. Let's uncover a dumpster file. And what not to do as a founder?
Yeah, so dumpster fire, I should say, is, it could be anything, but oftentimes it's found in the financials. Either it's excessive gross spending and, you know, it's really just out of control, right? You have all of the service providers and vendors that are unchecked, who don't audit their work. And then, you know, somebody comes in to look at everything. And they're like, hey, man, you've been spending $6,000 a month on a marketing firm that has generated no ROAS for you. They have done nothing for you. You've been continuing to optimize your own Facebook ad strategy in tandem with them. And you start to realize, well, having that firm is nice and it sounds good until you look at their work product and you're over there on the sideline doing the same thing, you know, trying to maintain your business. And you're just like letting that go to the wayside because maybe sometimes they put out good content or something like that. And that's just, you know, unacceptable. You start to look at the return aspects of it. And it's like, well, why are we spending the money here? You know, and I think that's like a, that's a good way to look at a dumpster fire from somebody else's perspective. When I come into a business and analyze it, I've never seen it. I don't know these people. You know, I'm constantly building the relationship. So I think about my own, like, you know, kind of perception of what I'm looking at. And I see like a disorganized, cluttered business with, you know, hardly anything holding it together other than the founders. You know, that's the crazy part is people are capable of managing like this, you know, chaos. But when you start bringing other people into the mix, you don't understand what's going on and you can't see any continuity. You're like, well, this thing's about to fall apart. And that might not be the case in all situations. You know, some founders are just really trying so hard to keep everything together that they don't realize that just putting a little bit of focus instead of on growth, on just maintaining what they have, you know, can bring a lot of improvement. So dumpster fire can be anything, but most of the time it's financial.
What type of person or individual or entity would you look for as a founder to have come in and be that third set of eyes that you're looking for and making sure that there's order and organization within your organization?
So to understand that question a little bit more, I guess you're saying what kind of person has the set of eyes to know that there's issues? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I guess really it's anybody with kind of a business mindset and a real openness to understanding what's going on and asking questions. I think, you know, I'm no expert in business, but I ask the right questions and I'm, you know, always open to understanding. And I think, you know, through time and through my experience with clients and in different disciplines, through different industries, you know, it builds this like sort of, you know, lens for me to look at it in more of a 30,000 foot view as opposed to like, you know, being from the industry, this is how we did it in my past and this is how it is. You start to come in and you feel comfortable to ask questions. I think the kind of person that would be good at my job is very inquisitive person, always kind of curious about what's going on and open to learning. Because like I said, it would be impossible to know how to run every type of business. So you have to rely on the founders who've built businesses in that space and let them kind of give you the answers. And then you start to understand, you know, what's going on. So I very open-minded person has to do my job, I'd say.
That's good, man. I'm curious, what would you consider yourself? Are you like a lifelong learner? Is that something that just really it's above and beyond and just something you've done, you know, throughout your life?
Yeah, I'd say it's like the greatest drug of all time because you never run out and you always want more. You know, you can never be an expert in everything. So it just seems like you're constantly entertaining yourself with different information. And, you know, I'm agnostic. I love to learn about science, art, literature. And I think that just drive to know more, it gives me a better understanding of myself. And I think, you know, once people start to build that relationship with learning, that they're improving themselves and it's not an outward, but I don't do it to be smarter for other people. I do it because it generally gives me a better understanding of like, where am I at in space and time? And we're all on the same little rocket with 24 hours a day. So you might as well enjoy what's been going on in the past and what's going on now. So,
what's exciting you now and what are you learning at this moment?
Yeah, so right now, I'm like kind of jumping on the hype train, but I love the metaverse. I think it's so exciting. I grew up playing video games as a kid, and I know that connection is possible through Xbox Live, you know, just talking with each other and playing the same game. I can see that extrapolated and breaking down all borders, you know, in business, you know, fun, whatever you want to look at. The metaverse seems to be the leading edge. I would say that coronavirus has like really kind of moved it forward in terms of the development, you know, by bringing everybody virtual and getting a little bit more comfortable, but it was going to happen eventually. It's so much more convenient. I don't think it takes away from our like existence in reality because it's virtual reality. But I think it augments our capability to be able to like go and explore, you know, and make friends with people on the metaverse and have that instant translation with people from Korea or Brazil. That's exciting. And it's going to make the world a better place. And, you know, if you're a crypto fan, well, now you've just found like the real use case for crypto is in a digital world where digital assets will be needed. So it's very exciting. I think technology is all coming together from all the different places, like the cloud, cryptocurrencies, VR, all of that is coming together and creating something that is really going to break down in our understanding of the current world.
I agree with you. You know, just the other day, I was looking at a different domains within the metaverse. And I've got to secure a few just because I know that Meta everything is going to be secured. So I needed to jump on that. Let's dive into Mariah a little bit. Okay. I really want to highlight you, what you guys do. And really, you know, we dove into your passions. We dove into why you're learning. We dove into the future here now. And let's talk about the future of Mariah and what excites you about your own business there.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I think it's great to have, you know, these passionate conversations that touch a little bit on everything. You know, I know we don't have very long together, so it's great to kind of go as quickly as we can. But, you know, Mariah does take up like most of my passion. I'm kind of what I'd like to say a 5 a.m. to 12 a.m. kind of guy when it comes to my daily schedule. I wouldn't say that's very regimented or structured, but, you know, I'm up and excited to be awake and working on something. For Mariah, it's constantly working with new clients. It's continued to grow that. And also, you know, we've started to dive into our own investments. You know, not only, you know, giving this transaction advice for founders who are ready to exit their business or help people place capital in potential businesses. I think for us, you know, the future looks like us deploying our own capital. As we successfully help founders exit, we make good money. But that money is one time. Right. And being in a service business, I think we often like have to accept this is that service businesses are really kind of suck if you can't get that recurring revenue. You know, you're constantly chasing money. You know, if you have costs, it puts you in a rock and hard place. So building out recurring revenue through our own investment platform is really the future of Mariah. It creates a more sustainable business. It allows us to work better for our clients, you know, less reliance on our actual fees driven. Really bring that value relationship together. So, you know, as we get bigger and bigger and our demands are more and more from the team, I don't want our costs to extremely go up and we only want to work with the biggest and best. The way that we fight that is building out an investment portfolio. So currently we've invested in an oil and gas project in southeastern Kansas and a real estate project in southwestern Missouri. So kind of part of America, but looking at two great, you know, assets, one being oil and the other real estate. And I think that gives us a great launch pad to, you know, further build out our investment portfolio and continue to grow out that, you know, project space for us. I think, you know, flips or long-term holds work for us. And, you know, that's one of the things that I'll tell your audience is you have to be open-minded. You know, when you put a plan together, it's really like, you know, sort of a guide. I wouldn't say it's the map. It's a guide, like a riddle. It's like, I kind of want to get here by doing this. And then you'll find out along the way as you build relationships, things come up that are better than what you planned. It's not that your plan wasn't ever going to work. There are better things out there for you. So, yeah, that's Mariah's future is really, you know, taking those fees and reinvesting them to generate our own yield and, you know, service clients with the kind of same structure in terms of cost.
Let's talk about, let's see, Mariah. And then now, what about the internal, you know, kind of corporate things that you've learned as a founder, right? So you founded a company, but now you're running and you're starting to add on new people that are coming aboard. So tell me about that transition, because you've got to mature yourself in order to attract the people that you want to work with in your business as well as your clients. So let's talk about the law of attraction and in addition to how you're adjusting to these growing pains or growing opportunities as a founder.
Yeah, I would definitely lead with pains. Like, I think that that's like something that always gets missed by like the gurus. They never want to talk about hardship. They'll say, yeah, life sucked and I didn't have any money, but now I'm rich. And they really focus on what they have because they're rich. And I think that's so detached from reality. As a leader of a business, you're worried about Jessica's kids and you're worried about David's car payment. And, you know, all of a sudden you're like the godfather of this family and you're in charge of the culture. You're in charge of their finances. You know, if you walk away, what happens to them? You can't. It like really puts you in a place and it's good. I think certain people are built to like take that on and lead. And like you said, there's a huge maturity curve, because the moment, you know, you hire somebody with a family, you're thinking about their family now. It's not like some young people straight out of college that are, it's like, oh yeah, startup, you know, it's like a Silicon Valley, the TV show, you know, like, oh, it's all cool. No, that is a thing, and that works. And to hold on to that while you can, that energy and innovation happens a lot in those spaces. But when it starts to get really real and you have people that are supporting families and worried about college tuition, it changes the game. And, you know, something that's really never talked about, and there's really no one there to support you. You just have to understand that this is why you did this, and it's real. You're like helping people.
How are you maturing through this process, and in what ways are you reaching out? Do you have a good support group? And, you know, as a founder of a company, would you suggest that people either hire a personal coach to help them throughout this process so you can have somebody to talk to? Because I know I've done that before, and that helped me because I didn't have anybody to talk to. And for those of you out there that are listening to this, when you are a founder, you can't really disclose all of the information to your spouse or all of the people that are within your network, because that's all you ever talk about. So I want to get your perspective on that, Hunter, on how your maturation has began.
Yeah. So one, people get tired of hearing about what you have going on. It sounds like the same old to, you know, your friends and family. So I'd like really shy away from that. It corrupts relationships, I would say. Oftentimes people, you know, in my circle say, you're like kind of obsessed with this, like you need to take a break. And that's just because I always talk about it. And like, you have to realize that there's a dichotomy within us, the two wolves fighting. One is, especially for really ambitious founders, like they're most of your audience, they're going to resonate with this. There's this person that has like a lot of love for the people around them, their friends and family, and they have that same love and passion for their business and their future. And those wolves are fighting within them. So separate them, put them in their own cage, and like, you know, really take time to appreciate the people that you have around you that aren't into the same thing as you. Yeah, it's great to like share some knowledge and like promote your friends and family and try to get them to the same level. But at some point it gets old, and it's like, who cares? You're talking about the same stuff you've been talking about for the last 8 months, just sounds a different names. You know, so make that separation. That's like one of the biggest things for me. It's like, you know, finding things to be passionate about outside of work. It's not hard, but like making it stop was the challenge for me, right? We wanted to work all the time. And like, if I worked as hard as I could, maybe my business would grow faster. Trust the process. It's like a plant, you know, it's all about the time put in over a long period of time, the day to day. It'll get old and you'll want to quit. So that's like one of the biggest things for me, is like making that separation. The life coach, I don't know. Everybody's kind of to each his own. For me, I don't think I need to pay somebody to like know that I have to like pull out, learn a little bit about myself, go into the woods, on the city streets, and don't think about business just for a little bit. Clear mind, it's like meditation, being mindful of what you're thinking about. You can do that on your own. You don't have to pay somebody. If you are in a really tough spot, it is important to talk to people. And I will say that if you have a lot of debt and like, you know, it really seems like you're coming to the end of your rope in your business, reach out. There are tons of people that want to talk to you about things like that. Even Mariah is open to working with people and providing insights. So if that's where you're at, that my message is not for you, and like, you know, really reach out and get that help. But if you're just like, you know, kind of getting bored, or you find yourself distracted or whatever, separate those wolves. You're capable of doing that.
Let's talk about your goals and how they've played a large factor in where you are today. And let's talk about some of the goals that you've set for yourself here in the future.
This is where I think I'm like from a different school of thought than most. I don't like rigid goals. I like really like going with the flow. I think rigid goals, one, it's for me, I found that, you know, outside of like quantifiable things, like I'm going to save, you know, $10,000. Every other goal that has to kind of do with what you want to do in your life, just do it. Like, you know, And if you can't do it now, well, how do you get there? And start thinking about that. And as you're progressing along, I just hate to disappoint myself. And I'm like I can easily disappoint myself. So like, it seems like writing down, like, I want to go hiking in Yellowstone. I know that's what I want to do. And if I want to do it, I'll go do it. And if it's a multi-step process, it's not like just get in a plane and go to Wyoming. I'm going to still do it. I know that that's what I want. I mean, if you got to write it down because you're forgetful, you got what's going on, do that. But for me, like, my goals are, I just want to be a person that enjoys life and like experiences things and, you know, is happy to be here. And the way I do that is, you know, through my business, what makes me happy, and through the things outside of my business that make me happy, going to the woods and traveling, all of that stuff is, those are my goals. I'm doing it. So I think that's one way to look at it.
For you out there, just do it. Hunter is saying, this is a quote unquote, Hunter says, just go do it, guys. Make sure it happens. I'm excited for really the next steps here in your career there at Mariah. I heard through the grapevine that you guys made a real good connection with a very fast growing company. Tell me a little bit more about that and where you think that partnership will go.
Yeah, so there's really two, and I think you may be mentioning one, but I'll go ahead and drop two for everybody. So really let them know we're on the forefront of innovation. MicroAcquire launched an advisor platform. They're the fastest growing M&A marketplace. That's what it is. It's a place to buy and sell businesses, and it's for everybody. $100 in recurring revenue, $100 million in recurring revenue. There are buyers there, and now they have added advisors. And so, you know, not only myself, but about 70 other people now are advisors on there, and they're great people, investment bankers, financial advisors, accountants, lawyers. It's everything. It's a one-stop shop for M&A and selling startups. The name MicroAcquire, it was specifically designed for small startups, you know, like much like what your audience has together. Maybe they get bought out by a money person that is like, all right, hey, you stay on and I'll invest in this product and let's build out the front and back end together. Or maybe it's a full-on acquisition. You have something that a big tech company wants. Well, they're looking on MicroAcquire too now. So there's that. And we just partnered with a company called Thin Talent for all of our, you know, internal talent, analysts, associates, MDs, VP level, investment bankers, and M&A professionals from all over the world. It's kind of the hybrid model. Some investment banks asked their employees to go back to the office, and a lot of people said, no, I'm going to start freelancing, and they went on to work at Thin Talent. And it allows, you know, boutique managers like myself to, you know, bring on analysts for projects, you know, not have to worry about insane overhead. Those people, they can work wherever they want at their own pace. And, you know, it's just all through their software. So yeah, Thin Talent is how we do our internal hiring. You know, we work with all our analysts hard through Thin Talent, and then how we get new clients and how we work with clients is through MicroAcquire. And, you know, these partnerships, they're endless. You know, there's nothing, you know, setting me down to just Thin Talent or just MicroAcquire. But their existence and the way that they're built out like that, no one can compete with them, right? There's nothing holding me back to trying something new. But why would I? The process is so efficient. So I think that's where we're really kind of on the cutting edge of innovation in our industry is, you know, we're looking at these web-based platforms where clients go on and they look for their advisors through the platform. And then on the back end, we're hiring hybrid and remote workers, you know, that work at their own pace and for as many hours as they want. If I say, hey, come work for 20 hours on this project, after that project, you know, I'm not beholden to them and they're not beholden to me. All I know is that they're vetted professionals with industry experience and they really know what they're doing. And you can see their resume and everything like that. So it's working great for me. And I'm excited. I think there is this community thing happening in the economy where it's all about sharing and it's all about working together to like achieve goals. And the people that are the best at that are becoming the most successful.
That's inspiring. I mean, you are an inspiration here to many out there. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, your personal story and how you've gotten to the point where you're at. And then really your message to the founders out there today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I did not start out like, well, I was always a smart kid, but I didn't start out with like massive ambitions. I always wanted to be a businessman. So I wanted to go to Harvard and, you know, go work on Wall Street. Well, as the older I got, you know, I started to kind of become woke to what was going on in the corporate world and universities. But, you know, let's kind of stay in my young years. You know, I always played sports, and I think that's where a lot of my team compassion comes from, is growing up in the sports world. I didn't like the rigid structure of it. I'm not big into rigid structure, but I did like the element of working together for a common goal. I think that is one of the ways that sports has impacted me. And it's so awesome because sports does so much for everybody. It's not just like, you know, staying in shape, and it's not just discipline. It's, you can take a lot away from it. It's just, it's fun. It's a dynamic thing to do. And for me, sports is all about becoming more people-oriented person. But, you know, I digress and want to focus more kind of on the path to business. So I was always interested in the stock market. I would get on Yahoo Finance like in third grade and like checking stuff out. And I thought that was cool. And I would like to watch it every day. And I'd have a little notebook and I'd keep track of stocks and see how they change. And yeah, about the time that I was in fifth grade, I was like, you know, I was with my grandma. I was in the middle of the summer and I'd been working. And I was like, Grandma, will you open me an E-Trade account? Like, they have this custodial option where you're on there and I can handle everything on my side, but I don't have any of the information. And she's like, well, let me see. And she looked at it and she's like, are you sure? Stock market's kind of risky. And I was like, I'm positive. And that was the beginning for me. And yeah, it started with the E-Trade custodial account. And, you know, I dabbled around. I worked summer jobs and do a little trading. And then here comes high school. I like, you know, really have woken up to like school and everything. And I was not like the most successful. Like you were not, if you looked at me then and saw me now, you'd be like, well, that's kind of a crazy change. You know, I was starting to become rambunctious and rebellious. I like hanging out and I like enjoying my life more than I like studying. I wasn't a bad student. I'd go in on test day and make A's, but I'd fail everything else. It's kind of funny. And I passed, so it's all right. But yeah, it's like, it's funny looking back on it because just in line with my school, my investing approach changed. I like stopped caring about what Berkshire Hathaway was investing in and like caring about fundamentals. I started trading penny stocks and following gurus, trying to like make a quick $1 million. You know, all this money I built up from fifth grade to high school, I like gambled it away on penny stocks, like, which is the greatest lesson of all time. Because like you get excited by shiny objects. And that was an awesome lesson. And everyone's like, you're so stupid for doing that. I'm like, no, I had no idea. And there was nobody else that knew that I was doing that. I had made all of this money from saving and investing, and I blew it all away. But I had those days where I'd make tons of money. And I was like, wow, this is where they get you. You know, it's kind of like winning the jackpot in the casino or something. You get like, you make a couple $1,000 in 5 minutes and you're like, I'm a genius and I can do this 1,000 more times and I'll be rich. No, that's not how it works. And like, you'll always fall to the wayside. It's hard. And so that was a couple of years of my life trying to get rich off the stock market and penny stocks. And, you know, I go off to college and like, I really, really wake up. Not only did I like understand how like the dynamic in the world was playing out, that the world was more about doers than people that followed the rules. You know, college is so pushed on people. And like, if you're a founder on this, listening to the show, like, and you did not graduate college, it's going to be okay. You might not be the next Warren Buffett or Jeff Bezos or, well, let's do dropouts, you know, like Bill Gates. You might not be the next Bill Gates, but there's nothing wrong with that because you look at the cohort that's in school or like went to school, they're debt slaves. But, you know, unfortunately for most people that went to college, they have to have a job to make their student loans, to keep their life in a symbiotic pattern. If they do not do that, it all crumbles and like everything's messed up. So there are people that are really enslaved by their debt to school. And for me, you know, if I wanted to go get my MBA, I would definitely have to take out student loans. So I just knew that that wasn't for me. And then I saw like, there was a lot of successful people that weren't Bill Gates, but you know, were multimillionaires in my life that worked for it. They built it all from the ground. They didn't like go off to school and then, you know, sell a company with their classmates. And you know, that wasn't that wasn't the life I grew up in small town West Texas. You know, the people that had money, they built it from the ground up. So that was really important for me to, like, you know, have this time in, because to see that it was through work. And school got in the way of me learning. I did not care about how to create punctual sentences or, you know, when Christopher Columbus came over. I love history. I didn't want them to tell me what history I have to learn. You know, there's always 10 sides to every story. And so that's it, right? Like, you know, and here we are slowly getting to my career. But I think, like, the foundational part of it is the young years, the years that everyone looks back and says, well, if I would have just done better in school, if I would have just done this, like when I was younger, it would all work out. That's a load of horse crap, honestly. You know, that's not how it has to be. I know 40-year-old people that are, you know, 10 years later now, and they're in their 50s, they are millionaires when they were nothing 10 years ago. And I was, you know, a young boy, I remember them, like, struggling, you know, my dad's friends and things like that. And they filled their lives up, you know, not in their 20s, but they still did it, you know. And I think that's, like, kind of the thing that's for me. I know I'm kind of rambling on about my life. And
not at all, man.
It's really interesting because, like, yeah, I look back and, like, I have those regrets. But, like, you know, when I talk to people about it, it's not the same type of regret. Internally, like, yeah, like, there are things that I should have, could have, would have done, right? But whatever, you know. But when it comes to my advice, I think, like, I always say, like, strive to be better than me, because I know that me dwelling on my past hasn't done me anything. It's always me doing stuff now and in the future. So anyways, I'm in college. I hate it. It's like the biggest waste of money. Like, I know I could totally be out there, like, making money, even with my hands, like, building houses or anything, working on a construction site. I knew I could make more money than just sitting around. And by the time it was all said and done, the years that I paid into college and the amount of money that I make every year more than if I had just started working didn't add up to me. I was like, man, by the time that I'm, like, 6 years from now, I'm going to be rich. So, well, I don't know why I'm in here, because I'm going to come out with debt and at square one. Might as well get started on my life now. So, you know, through my family connections, my granddad had worked in the oil and gas industry for like 46 years. And he still had some buddies that probably hadn't made it out of the business yet. And he's like, hey, Hunter needs a job. And they're like, well, you know, we can't just give him a job. So he's going to have to go through the interview process. But, you know, I'm a people person. And I was like, I knew my stuff. I wasn't worried about it. You know, I spent weekends with my grandpa in the summer going out to the oil field, looking at the wells and stuff. So kind of knew what I was getting myself into. And so, yeah, I go out to Midland, Texas, and I start my career completely on my own. And for the first time, really, you know, when I was in college, I lived in the dorm, so it doesn't count. I, like, move out there with all my stuff in my car, and here we go. It's the beginning. And, you know, a few months into it, I got a job offer from a bigger company in an office. And I was like, well, hell yeah, I'll get out from the outside and go in an office, make more money too. So I was, like, excited. And yeah, that just kept happening, like, three times more. And then by the end of it, I was like, yeah, I kind of work for myself. Like, hate this. This is not me. I, like, I'm watching these companies run themselves with, like, no culture, no organization. And they're the big companies. And I'm like, holy shit, if I can see this, I'm on to something. And I, like, need to really get started on my journey. And I would say all of those things taught me so much, you know, working in the office, working out in the field. Like, I see, like, how powerful, like, when the CEO speaks, even the people in the warehouse, they hear it and they get the messaging and the way it reflects on them. And I don't know, learning systems and working with these big companies, like, it just really, like, showed me that I think I had something going on and I really could do something big.
Yes.
And I just got inspired.
Let's talk about real quick. Let's talk about your culture that you're creating. I know that's extremely important as you're building a business. And through my experience or your experience, many people's experience, I mean, that's why people leave. That's why people stay. What is the culture that you're creating at Mariah? And what do you think the best culture is? And on top of that, what is your leadership style?
Yeah. So this is going to be cliche, but I run a meritocracy, obviously. Like, I think that, like, talking to me, it's like, I'm all about who you are, where you are, and what you're doing. Now it's not so toxic, like, oh, it's cool to eat around here. No way. But at the same time, if you're not excited, if you're not passionate about what's going on, and like this isn't like what wakes you up in the morning, like if it's something else, I don't think our relationship's gonna work out. Most of the time, my energy rubs off on my team, and you know, people have come onto the team, and maybe they were a little bit more introverted, and like they weren't like, you know, bureaucratic, and they weren't like excited to do all of that. But by the end of it, like my proactive leadership style is like, I like get people excited. I'm like, hey, it's 7:30. Like, I'm so excited. Like the day, it's like super nice here. How's it over there? What are your plans? It's not like, hey, I need that report by 11:30. No, I'm just like, what are you doing today? You know? And then I find the holes, conversation comes up. I'm like, a little bit more passive about it, you know? But at the same time, like I'm always there. So it's like, you know, kind of like lurking around.
Active leadership.
Yeah.
Maybe you're in the trenches.
Yeah, people might feel a little pressure from me, but like I'm like nice to deal with a smile. I'm not like barking at them. I'm more like, how can I help you? And if I can help you, this will get this done faster. And that's me doing my job, is, you know, delegating and elevating tasks. You know, hey, maybe that's a little too much for you, but I could do that in 5 minutes because I have more experience and it took you an hour. So here's this, and I'll trade you something that's a little bit not in my element. And I think it's Gino Wickman came up with Delegate, Elevate. Kind of him and Jim Collins worked together on EOS, which is a very famous quality management system for businesses. Love their books, Traction and Good to Great. Awesome leadership books for anybody interested in some leadership books. I think that's the way it is. Also, to take another page out of two of my favorite like leader founders in their books, Ray Dalio and Stephen Schwartzman. Ray Dalio, obviously, Principles, and Stephen Schwartzman, The Pursuit of Excellence. They talk about these right people for the job. And like when I'm conversating people with, you know, potential hirees or whatever you'd like to call them, contractors, vendors, everybody really, even clients, I'm like, don't want to work with bad clients. Everybody has their right position. And if they're not in the right position, they're not going to perform well. And if I don't have the seat for them, then I don't need to make them one, because that's not how I grow. I like grow by like filling what I have currently, reaching capacity, and then like finding the easiest path. I mean, literally the path of least resistance in my growth, right? So, you know, it might be more sales sides, it might be consulting on process or strategy, whatever, right? But I think you've got the right people working for you, and they're like happy about everything. You don't really have to lead them that much. You're kind of just there to keep them happy and let them know why they're doing it.
So true. So true. Well, Hunter, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, getting to know you a little bit better, the heart behind why you do what you do, more about Mariah Consulting, your past. And, you know, I just want to turn out to the audience and say thank you for your time. Thank you for listening to this, and hope you have grasped a lot of education. Yes, some inspiration from him is his stories, and also the supportive community that we're creating here at the Founders Odyssey podcast. So anything else to add, Hunter?
Yeah, for sure. Like just to add to that, you know, reach out. You can find us at mariah-consulting.com. You don't have to be an M&A client. If you're coming from the Founders Odyssey, I'd be happy just to talk to you. And if you feel like you need to talk to me, I'm here. So reach out to me. I'm always open door. I'll send you a calendar link and we'll get our times together. So That's my offer to your audience, Nathan, is to reach out if they need it. So.
Perfect. Well, thanks a lot, guys. If you like this podcast, feel free to subscribe and share with your friends. Until next time, we'll talk to you.